We had a lot of rain in June, and now here we are in July. We've had cool temperatures and not as much sun, maybe, as our plants want. I don't know. We'll find out. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk with our guest today, Karen Johansson. Worked for many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. And tell you what, she knows a whole lot about gardening, and she's here to help you with your garden. So I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Karen, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's been a cool first half of the summer. In general, what do these long stretches of cool and even cloudy days mean for our growing season?
Well, we're thinking, oh, it's not warm, and what's going to happen to the gardens? And at least in the Madison area, these temperatures are ideal for most gardeners. Mm-hmm. Tomatoes and peppers, their ideal temperatures daytime run from about 70 to 85 during the day, and then anything as long as it's above 55 at night. So we actually are getting ideal temperatures above 85 for your tomatoes and your peppers. Things don't pollinate well, and the fruit doesn't set well. So mm-hmm. we should be getting very good fruit pollination and flower pollination and fruit set. And they also, things kind of quit ripening so well when it gets, you know, in the 90s with mm-hmm. high humidity. So the tomatoes and peppers should be doing great. Now, if you live a little further north where we're getting the lower nighttime temperatures in Dane County here, I don't think we've gone much below 55, maybe one night here or there. If you get much below 55, then we have a little bit problem with the pollination and the fruit set on the other end. So it just kind of depends where you are in the state. And I know we have a lot of listeners way up north, so mm-hmm. they might be not having a great gardening season. But here in Dane County, things are going crazy. And it's also been excellent for transplanting things, sowing grass seed, moving nursery stock. My garden is going gamebusters.
Yeah, and we've been eating tomatoes out of the garden for about a week.
Right.
Already, and
that's
man,
about,
they're really coming on.
Yeah, they really are. And next week looks good. I mean, we're going to have maybe one day in the 90s, but then it's supposed to drop back down. So at least in our area, in Dane County, it's been doing well. One thing with our weather, though, that I think gardeners may not be considering is the moisture and the rainfall, because it seemed like it rained every day in June.
Yeah.
Now, we really haven't had a lot of rain the last couple of weeks. So watch your new nursery stock that you may have planted within the last season or two. Watch your new perennials, anything. And you may need to do some good heavy soakings. On nursery stock, the rule of thumb is soak them once a week, a good half mm-hmm. inch to an inch of water. Perennials, sometimes you need to water them every day when you first put them in. But again, with the cool temperatures, things transplant so beautifully. I moved some hostas 2 weeks ago, which you shouldn't be able to do so easily. But oh boy, they transplanted beautifully because of the weather. So I'm loving it. I think it's great.
What about fertilizing?
Well, fertilizing is so important, and especially when we get in the middle of July. Now, depending on what you're growing, there's kind of different guidelines. First of all, your container gardens, they're going to be the hungriest because you're watering constantly and nitrogen leaches out every time you water. So watch your containers. I usually recommend fertilize your containers at least once a week with a water-soluble, especially if you're watering them every day. Mm-hmm. Even twice a week sometimes, especially if you have the wave petunias that are extra hungry. Then you get into your annuals that are planted in the gardens, both meaning your vegetables and your flowers. In the gardens, I usually like to use a water-soluble about every 2 weeks.
Okay.
But watch your, you know, directions. Or if you're working in a granular, you can get sometimes 4 to 6 weeks. So look at your directions if it's a slow release. Then you get into your perennials. Now, perennials are not as hungry, and usually once a season is fine.
Good enough.
So if you fertilized your perennials in the spring, you know, unless they're showing signs of nutrition deficiency, you should be good to go. And the other thing with your perennials, you want to always, and your roses, don't fertilize much after the middle or end of August, because you actually don't want to push that soft growth. So, yes, fertilizer right now is very, very important.
Karen Johansson, our guest, if you have a question for her, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Krista on Facebook had a question regarding cool weather. Wanted to try a fall crop of peas, greens, and root veggies. Planted all these in the spring. Only the peas worked out. Is it even feasible to try a fall crop this year, and when should I start? I'm in the Appleton area. Peas, greens, root vegetables may be a problem.
Well, you know, in this spring, peas perhaps in Appleton, she actually rotted out. We were getting so much rain up there. A lot of times the fall crops in the Madison area, we usually tell people to start their broccoli and things about the middle of August. So she may need to move that up maybe a week, a little. So it's coming right around the corner. I mean, so I definitely, you can put in a root crop. And I don't know why your leafy vegetables wouldn't be doing well this year. You know, and you could probably try, you know, for a price of a pack of seeds, throw some in and see what happens. But the general rule of thumb is to start your broccoli and things about the middle of August.
Kim on Facebook lost her cucumber plant. She said, I had them in a big container growing up a trellis. They just turned yellow like they would at the end of the season. I've grown this way before with good results. Any reports of cucumber problems this year? I haven't heard anything.
Well, I haven't heard of any per se. However, you know, depending again where she is in the state, cucumbers love to be warm.
Yeah.
So they might just have gotten too cold and too wet. And so I would definitely try them again. Cucumbers are fast. That's the beauty of them. So definitely throw some seeds in and start. And she might want to start with fresh soil, too. That would be the other thing in her container in case there was some type of pathogen. So I would take the container, maybe watch out with a little bleach, and then put in fresh media.
Allie in East Troy has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Allie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for your show. I had a question regarding some shrubbery. It's just kind of wild area along our property line. And this year, it is just full of a shrubbery that has a very bright red berry. It almost looks like a currant, but I don't believe from the shape of the leaf that it is.
And what was the question about it?
She wants to know what it is, I think.
Oh, I don't know. How's that for an answer?
Straightforward.
We don't. Well, it's. What are the leaves like?
Where'd she go?
Well, like I said, they're not a currant leaf, but they are a green leaf, and they're kind of a broad leaf with more of a pointy.
And is it? Boy, I mean, there's high bush cranberry. There's
Oh, this is growing like a weed.
Like a weed. You know, I'm trying to think what's got a red berry on it. You know, there's honeysuckle. I mean, honeysuckle has the opposite leaves. They're kind of round. You sure it might not just be your basic weedy honeysuckle?
I don't believe so. It doesn't blossom like that in the spring. My question would be, is there any source that I might check that some of this might be available to kind of check and see what, you know.
Oh, okay.
Well, the easiest thing I would do is whack off a nice branch of it that's got some berries and has a nice branch of the leaves. You know, don't just pluck a little tiny leaf, but get a good branch of it. And I would take it into an area garden center and, you know, to try to find some professionals. And that's what I would recommend. I don't know where you live, but there's lots of them around in the Madison area that should be able to help you out.
Or your county extension office, the horticulture agent at your county extension office is going to be able to identify it too. It might even be, if you get a good photo of it, if you can take a photo of me, put it up on my Facebook page, and maybe looking at it, we'd be able to identify it. And there may be some other people calling in with suggestions too, so stay listening. But if you have a photo, post it up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That'd be great. Thank you for calling, Allie. Appreciate your call. Annie in Ashland up next. Hi. Thank you for calling, Annie.
Hi. I love you guys' show.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have slugs, like, eating my green beans and my radishes. And I have a friend up here who actually works for the UW Extension, and she said it's definitely slugs. And she goes, just go out there and squish them all. And I really hate doing that. So I looked something up online about building these traps, and you just got to dump some beer in there.
Uh-huh.
And all I'm catching is flies and moths.
Okay. Well,
slugs, like, go underneath the trap.
Yep.
They coming out underneath it. They don't go in.
Yeah, that's the thing. Slugs, you know, and this year they are, you know, they love this cool, rainy weather that we had in June. And so there's lots of ways to get rid of slugs. And if you're gardening organically, the traps, like you take a tuna fish can, something shallow like that, sink it in so it's at the ground level, and you put beer in there, or you can put yeast. What they're attracted to is the yeast. So the idea is they crawl along and they fall in the beer and they die. That's one way. There's also a product called Sluggo, which is organic. It's I believe it's iron phosphate, and it's little pellets, and it's great. You throw it out, they're attracted to it, they like to eat it, and then they die, and it's totally non-toxic to mammals and birds and things. And when you're applying it, just bear in mind that the slugs, you know, you got to get it down to where they are, you know, they're underneath the leaves and such. Going and squishing them, I know it doesn't sound like fun, but it is worth doing. And you might be surprised. Sometimes I had an area with my hosta where I thought it was slugs, and I'm putting slug bait, the poison, the chemicals, the organic, I'm putting the traps out, and my plants were still disappearing. So I finally went out there at night with a flashlight, and it was earwigs. the damage looks so similar that you might want to just make sure that you really are battling slugs, and you probably are. I'm not disputing that. But if you're battling earwigs...
There's weed matting down over the whole garden, and I see the little trails.
Okay, well, there you go. So, but those are some organic ways, and then there are the chemical baits, which work great too, you know, but you want to be careful with those, with dogs and things. But they're less expensive. They're a lot less expensive, so you could try that.
The other thing, have you set a board out along the edge of the garden? Because they will go under a board, you know, like in the daytime, you just go out there, and that's when you pick them up and throw them in a can of soapy water.
Yeah, or even a big piece of leaf lettuce, you know, mist it down, and they'll go in there and hide and, you know, lay that down instead of a board. Sometimes they'll, get on that and, just harvest them. That way you don't have to touch them.
There you go, Annie. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Talking today with Karen Johansson, who's worked for many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses of Madison. Great to have her with us. Great to have you listening in. When you call, Jennifer Dargan, in her usual smiley, fun voice, will put you on the program. Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk with my guest, Karen Johansson. Join in with your questions. We have this open line. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. We have a Facebook comment from Teresa. My parents have lost much of their garden to deer. They have a fenced-in garden and have plastic bags on posts, but to no avail. Deer have also been eating away at other plants and flowers throughout their yard. Any suggestions?
Well, lots of them. Deer, you know, as we keep squishing out their habitat, you know, they're coming more and more into our yards, and you got a couple things going for you. They have a real strong sense of smell and taste, so lots of different repellents you can try. One of the ones that I had customers tell me for years worked was Irish Spring soap. They would put it in little plastic bags or shavings. They didn't like the smell. Spraying products on your plants. Liquid Fence was one that our customers by and far had very, very good response to. And it was a non-toxic product. You spray it on the leaves. The limiting factor, of course, is when the leaves grow, the deer would, you know, sometimes chew the things right back to the Liquid Fence. I have a friend that lives up in Minocqua, and she battles deer constantly. She finally put up one wire of an electric fence. Worked great. And that's actually quite easy to do. It's not as difficult as it sounds. She also had very good luck with sprinklers with motion detectors.
Mm-hmm.
So the deer would enter the garden, it would set off the motion, and the sprinkler would go off. The deer would take off. Radios sometimes work well that way. So some of those ideas she certainly may try.
And I think, yeah, and I think you're right in that electric fence is...
They're not that difficult.
They're not that hard, and they can be solar. The battery can be solar operated. You might not even have to plug it in if your garden is away from the house. So I know a lot of people really swear by that. And, of course, a dog.
Well, yeah, except if you have a, dog like ours that sleeps inside.
Yeah, well, it's got to be a kind of an outside dog.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lots of things we can talk about. There's a photo here.
Oh.
Bill Hamilton sent us a photo of a small potted tree.
Mm-hmm.
He takes outside in warm weather. The pot was not draining well and had some standing water in it. The leaves are turning brown and falling off. Appears to be some new growth. Is there anything we can do to save this tree?
Yeah, what that is, it's a Schefflera arborcola or Hawaiian Schefflera. It looks like classic overwatering, and from his description of not draining well, what I would recommend doing is, first of all, when he takes it outside, I'm sure he puts it in the shade, because if you put a houseplant even in a sunny window outdoors, you know, he burns, you know, they fry it. But this does not look like sunburn. It looks like rotting. Well, the root system has been compromised. So really back off on the water, obviously, and try to give it as much air circulation. I would probably cut it back a little bit. That particular plant responds well to cutting back. Tear off all that old growth that is all rotted. And there's some products you can put in to stimulate new root production that has a little bit like root hormones or transplanting mm-hmm. solution. He might check into those. But sometimes once you get a root rot like that, I'm not.
It's very hard to get rid of.
Yeah, I'm going to cross my fingers. But boy, I don't know. That doesn't look like it's real happy.
Hank in Platteville, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi, I'd like to hear more about how to get rid of earwigs, particularly like on apple trees and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, on apple trees, you'd have to spray. I didn't know they were a problem on apple trees. They crawl up? The earwigs?
Yeah, they're in the apples.
They're in earwigs in the... Okay, well, earwigs, a couple things that you have going for you is they hate sunshine. And so you have to think about when you're using products to treat against them, you have to treat their hiding places during the day. So like underneath bushes, they were horrible in my mailbox for some reason, or like any place where they can hide, you know, from the sun. So when you're treating, no matter what you're using, there are some organics like diatomaceous earth that looks just like flour that they literally crawl through, and it dries out their bodies. Make sure you don't breathe it though. Even though it's organic, it's not, you don't want to breathe that stuff. So put a little scarf over your mouth. If you're going to use pesticides, a really good one are the permethrins, also known as 8. There are sprays which work great if you have a broad area. You can put them on a hose end sprayer and just blast the whole area. I like to spray them at dusk because that's when they're all active. They're going to all be coming out. Sometimes the powders, though, work well. You can get by with a little less powder, but you know, powder underneath where they're hiding, and then they'll drag it into their nest. So those are some ideas. There's the rolled up newspaper moist in the morning. You can try to harvest them, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Throw them in, you know, thing of sudsy water. But for an apple tree, something that large, you may have to resort to spraying them with like a hose end sprayer. Mm-hmm. There are some organics you might get by with. Some of the pyrethrins, which are organic, but the problem is they break down so quickly in sunlight and they don't have a lot of residuals, so I don't think that's going to work really well. I'm thinking 8, but read all your label directions and make sure you can read it on, that you can use it on your edible apples.
And good luck, Hank. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jamie in West Allis will turn to you now. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have kind of two questions, if that's okay.
Okay.
One, my garlic this year, it's all organic garlic, and it's in a lot of compost and stuff. It's just not developed nearly as much as it has been in the past few years.
Okay.
It's not yellowing over. The stems don't look like they're ready yet, and normally by now I would have had it pulled out and drying. I am wondering if I should perhaps pull back all the straw mulch that's over them to sort of heat that up and dry them out a little bit. And then my other question, a lot of my pepper plants are significantly smaller than what they have been in the past.
Well, the garlic, you know, they might have just gotten too wet. Are these garlic that you plant in the fall and you leave them in and then Or did you plant them in the spring?
No, I put them in the fall.
Yeah.
I also winter them in the fall.
Yeah. It just might have been too wet and cold for them the spring, but I don't think I'd necessarily pull the mulch off at this point because we are having drier weather. I would just see how they do, and if they just are really kind of funky all summer, this fall, you may want to dig them up, divide them out, maybe go buy some fresh corms, get some certified ones that are virus-free, and that type of thing. You may want to consider just, you know, investing in some new fresh rootstock.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys sell that?
Yeah, are you there?
Yes, do you guys sell that?
Well, unfortunately, Johansson's closed last August. It'll almost be a year. It's even hard for me to talk about it. But we, after 54 years, my mom, brother, sister, and I were all happily retired, but we still miss it so much. So Johansson's is gone. But there's a lot of other garden centers in the Madison area. You can,
you're in West Allis.
In West Allis, I'm sure there's someone that you won't find garlic now. You're going to get it probably in the fall because all the spring stuff should be gone, and then you should be able to get your fall crops that people bring in with their bulbs usually around the 1st of September.
Many good garden centers out there.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then you had a question about his pepper plants.
It's mostly my jalapenos.
Okay, well, that is the one pepper that does like it a little bit warmer, and, you know, some of the peppers. But, again, I even researched this last night because I knew I was coming on today. And even peppers, you know, they are happy in temperatures of the low 80s. So I don't know why they might be stunted. Are these in containers or in the garden?
They're in raised bed gardens, lots and lots of compost.
Well, if they're underdeveloped, you may want to get a soil test and see what your media is doing, see what you might need for nutrients. If you haven't done that in a while, that might help you out. Or it could just be it's been a little cool. But again, everything that I've been looking at is we should have ideal temperatures in the West Allis, you know, that's Milwaukee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, area. So you should be good, unless you've been getting some colder night temperatures than what we've had in Madison. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, pretty chilly. Just one more real
sure.
Kind of a quick funny story. When you guys were talking about the motion sensors for sprinklers.
Sure.
I used to live right next to a bar, and those work excellent to have people stop going to the bathroom on your
arbicide. I love it. That's great. That's great entertainment value, too.
thanks, JB. That's good. He used a little common sense and sneaky approach.
Love it.
I love it, too. And Phil King sent a couple of photos in on my Facebook page. This is look at this. Potted.
That's Calibacoa, also known as Million Bells.
Wow,
they look
beautiful.
Like little baby petunias. Yeah, they love this weather.
That's a 12-gallon container.
Yeah.
And the oranges and yellows and purples.
And the other thing I wanted to note is he talked about a biostimulant, and that really has come on the scene in the, you know, they've been around forever, but commercially and packaged. The biostimulants, you know, putting in your microorganisms and that really helps. And so investigating those is a great idea.
Yeah. Thanks for sending that, Phil. And I hope if you're near your computer, you might go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and take a look at that. It's really beautiful.
And then he's got gazanias, and he said he used the biostimulant on those. The gazania daisies, even in this cool season, see, those look more like ostomeria. And they like to be cool. So I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that's why they're doing so great, because they like this cool weather.
Nancy in Grafton has a question. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good morning. Our tomato plants are really high, and there are cages around them,
mm-hmm.
and they have some little tomatoes on it now and some blossoms, but there's a doggone high. Do you think they should be pruned back or left to get up to the sky?
Well, that's kind of up to you. A lot of gardeners like to not necessarily top them, but, you know, take off some of the side shoots and don't let everything come, because that way some of the tomatoes that are left get a little bit bigger, lets light and lets air. And so certainly you can prune them. You know, they're a big vine. Watch what you're doing with your nitrogen. If you're getting tons of green growth, you might, you know, back off a little bit on your nitrogen, which is the first number. Your fertilizers have three numbers. And mm-hmm. the first one's nitrogen. I always remember the first one's the green growth. The middle one, well, that's fruits. You know, it's kind of the middle of the plant. And then the third number is potassium, and that's kind of roots. So watch that. You certainly could top them, most certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing is my clematis died.
Okay.
I want to get a new one.
Yes.
Another one was a Jack Manny. Is there any that are the best, you know, that are really good hardy ones.
Well, clematis, a couple things when you're shopping for a clematis, look at how they like to be pruned, number one. Some clematis, like the Jackmanni, that's the old standard. That's the purple one. I don't think you're ever going to find a better one, personally. But that one likes to be hard pruned every spring. It's really easy. You can go in and whack it off to about a foot in the spring. And then there are other clematis that bloom better on some of their older growth. So you want to be a little more selective in pruning. So look at that when you're selecting them. Lots of different varieties, but the standard, and I still feel the standard in the industry, is the Jackmanni. Now, I know there's probably people out there going, no, there's way better ones. But there's tons of varieties, and so maybe do a little web search and check it out.
Plant those in spring or in fall?
You can plant them anytime. You can find them. You certainly can plant them all summer long. So perennials, you can always pop in if you're buying them from a garden center where they're potted. So, yeah, usually they're available in the spring. But if you can still find a nice, healthy one, you know, in some of your area garden centers, go ahead and put it in now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. We got a couple of ideas from two listeners. Different listeners of what that red berry, the bush with the red berries could be. One caller thought red baneberry. Another caller said maybe deadly nightshade. So
nightshade is such a vine, though.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it could be, certainly.
And here's Margie in Kennan, I believe. Hi, Margie.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a question about my raspberries. I planted some Boyne raspberries in 2010. And just the past 2 years, the tips have been breaking off, and I have taken a Master Gardener class. I looked up in my big manual to see what pests there are for raspberries, and it said it could be the cane borer. So last year, I snipped off the plants at least 6 to 8 inches below all the tips. That every time a tip would wilt and fall over, I'd cut it off and burn those in my burning barrel. And now this year, I have fewer of the tips that are falling off my bushes are loaded with berries, but I have entire canes turning brown, drying up.
Okay, well, first of all, are these the June bears or the ones that bear in the spring and the fall?
June bears.
Okay, well, you know that they only bear once on a cane and then the cane dies.
Correct.
Okay, so
these are turning brown and drying up before the berries.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to establish that. Boy, I would take them in the plant pathology lab. Where do you live?
Southern Price County.
Okay, well, I would take it into your extension area or, you know, in Madison here, we have an excellent plant pathology lab. I would dig up some of the cane very carefully. Don't yank it out of the ground, but get some of that soil and take the whole thing and have the plant pathology lab check it out. I don't know if you can mail them into Madison. I mean, the samples might get old, but or check in your extension area where you live.
You can mail them to the plant disease diagnostic clinic. At UW-Madison, they recommend mailing early in the week so if you mail on a Monday, you're going to be in pretty good shape. If you mail so it sits over the weekend, then it's not so good.
Yeah, and priority mail, usually if you're in the state, you probably can get it next day.
Okay, and is there a cost to have that done?
Yeah, there's a small cost. You can go online to the UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and all of the procedures in that, it's a small amount of money.
I think it's about $15 is what it was. Yeah,
it's worth it.
It really is worth it, because then you know what you're battling.
Okay. I just wanted to comment that last week's guests had the same question about the tips falling over, and she said it was cosmetic, don't worry about it. And I disagreed, but I was in my car and couldn't call in.
If it's not fruiting, that's more than cosmetic. Yeah, I don't know.
Thanks, Margie. Thank you very much for calling. Sarah emailed and wondered if it's too late to prune back her oak leaf hydrangea bushes. There are many branches that don't leaf out until after the hard winter, or that didn't leaf out after the hard winter. Is there still time just to cut them back?
Oh, absolutely. Anything that's dead, definitely cut that out. And hydrangeas, there are some types that bloom off of new growth, like the big white snowball ones. Those you want to prune back anyways. But I believe the oak leaf hydrangeas are types that bloom best off of their old growth. But by pruning them, you're not going to hurt the plant. You just might sacrifice some of your blooming. But definitely anything that's dead, diseased, go ahead and get in there and cut them out.
Peter from St. Croix County wondered about his ferns. He planted them in the backyard garden. They're turning black at the tips. Anything to worry about there? What would you recommend? Ferns turning black at the tip.
Well, I'm thinking too dry. Yeah. And I know we've gotten a lot of rain, but if there are new plantings, check that he's, thoroughly soaking them and keeping them moist. Don't water at night. On the flip side, if you're watering at night, you might be promoting disease. You know, don't water, you want to water it more in the morning so your plants can dry out in case it is more disease related. So the foliage is dry before nightfall. So those would be the two things that would come to mind.
And Megan emailed, wonders about her knockout roses. Planted them last year. They bloomed throughout the entire season last year with no deadheading. This year they bloomed beautifully, yet about a week ago, they just kind of dried up.
Well, again, depending on where you are, watch that moisture. Especially if the heads are nodding on roses, you can tell, like when they're blooming, the flower heads will literally nod, and that tells you they're too dry. Roses like to be watered very thoroughly, about twice a week. They don't want to be watered lightly. They don't want to be watered overhead with the foliage because they're disease prone. So just put a slow running hose and soak them really good and see if that helps. It might, because you might be feeling the upper part of the soil and they're like, oh no, that feels moist, but it might be dry.
Pete in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Jennifer. I have three apple trees that were new last year, and this year their trunks are about 2 inches in diameter. So they're pretty young trees.
Mm-hmm.
But this year they got an orange blight, which I think I found online is related to juniper bushes or the juniper bushes. So my question is, one of the three, the wealthy species, is suffering greatly, and the others are somewhat involved with this. Do I want to take the apples off them or do something to help them survive? What can I do to make it easier for them to get through this summer?
Well, yeah, you're talking about the cedar apple rust. Is that what it looked like to you?
That's the name, yes.
Yeah. Well, just try to keep the vigor up. So, yes, if you maybe don't want to let them fruit, put energy into the fruit, depending on how diseased they are, make sure you keep them very well watered. I'd fertilize them again. You don't want to fertilize real late in the season, but I'd give them some good fertilizer. Keep them well watered. When you do water, obviously water the base. Don't get water on the leaves. And off the top of my head, I can't think of what the life cycle is on that. So I would have to look that up. But I believe once you start seeing the spores, it's too late to treat. I believe you need to treat the fungus preventatively. And I believe it is in the spring when they first start leafing out. But again, I would have to look that up. And if you go on the UW website, or if you still, you can even go on johansons.com. Our website's still live, and there is a button there that says click here for the plant pathology, and you could just pull up the UW Extension Bulletin, and it'll tell you what the life cycle and when the proper time. But our website's really easy to get to, Johansson's, JohannsenS.com, and you'll see a direct link to the UW Extensions.
All right.
And Jennifer, it sounds like my trees aren't yet doomed.
I don't think so. No, not at all. Uh-uh.
Okay. That makes me feel a lot better.
Go ahead.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling, Pete. Herman in Waukesha. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, well, thanks for taking my call. I have an ornamental cherry tree that's about 7 years old, and it's been blooming, almost every year. But this year, after the hard winter, it leafed out, but some of the leaves start falling off, and some of the branches seem like they're dead, and I don't know what the problem is.
Well, there is different diseases that attack cherries. You might have had winter kill, but if they leafed out, I wouldn't think that would be it. Scrape them, and if they're green underneath, they're still alive. But if they're dead or brittle and they snap real easy, prune them back. But that would be one I don't know off the top of my head. And again, you might want to take a branch that where the tips are dying and cut it back to where you get healthy part and get that to the plant pathology lab, and they might be able to help you out a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll give that a try.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That one, I just don't know.
Thanks for calling, Herman. Karen in Jefferson. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, hello, Karen and Larry. I have a question about the emerald ash borer, and I know Karen being from Madison, and they're so proactive there with that. And then you, Larry, had been on the board of the Dane
County Tree Board, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you still on that?
No, I'm retired off the board, but I served on it for many years, for sure.
Yeah, so I figured you know something about trees, too. So even I thought I'd still ask my question. I've got two full-grown Patmore ashes, and they look great right now, and I want to keep them that way.
Yep.
I've never heard of this strategy, but I was wondering if it makes any sense at all, like when you're using dormant oil spray on your fruit trees to also do the Patmore ash, if there were eggs or something that overwintered on the bark. I mean, I have no idea the biology of
that.
There's actually a good material that you can have either apply it yourself or have tree people come out and do it for you that will are not – it's not real expensive. It's I'm starting to think of what it costs, but – usually they charge according to the inch, diameter inch.
Yeah, you're talking the chemical imidacloprid.
Yeah. And
that's the rule of thumb, and you apply it. It's super easy to apply. You don't spray it. It's taken up by the root system, and you apply it in the spring and the fall.
Actually, it'll last 2 years.
Well, okay, then there's some other chemicals,
there's
too.
There's a new chemical.
Oh, okay. The one I'm familiar with.
Is that a preventative, or is that a if your tree has it already?
No, it's preventative. It will not, it's not going to help if your tree has it already.
Well, but the research that I read is that if your tree gets emerald ash borer, it isn't necessarily doomed the first year. You can get on it, keeping it well watered, keeping it healthy, and then you know the imidacloprid was always the one that we were selling. I talked to Phil Pelletieri about 2 months ago, and he said that is a still – that he's the retired entomologist from University of Wisconsin here. He said the imidacloprid is still a good one, but some of them are not labeled.
That? Excuse me?
I'm sorry?
Imidacloprid.
It's I like an igloo, M-M. I got to write it down here. Let me see.
I know what you mean.
It's I-M-M-A-D-O. CLOPRID, I believe. And the one that pops out is the product. It's in a blue bottle by Bayer, like the aspirin. And it's tree and shrub. Now, some of them aren't labeled that you can apply it heavily enough, so they recommend twice, you know, applying it in the spring and the fall. But so there's all different concentrations of a lot of these chemicals that are out there. So it's very, very important to read all your directions. And like Larry was saying, that you put in so many ounces per inch of trunk diameter. And that one also is good for Japanese beetles, using it systemically like that. And it's super easy to use. You mix it up, put it in a bucket, and you pour it at the base of the tree and then water it in. And then there are some other chemicals that the cities have been using that you actually drill into the trunks and put it in systemically that. And that one I'm not as familiar with. Oh. And there are some that some of the commercial tree people are using. So there's new things out there that I'm not familiar with. And like Larry said, there's one for 2 years. And that one I'm personally not familiar with. So I bet there's got to be some good extension
there's
bulletins.
There's some really, well, yeah, it's so new, though. We don't have a bulletin out on it yet.
Oh, okay.
But you should be able to check. We just on a church property, there was a couple of ash trees, and I forget, it was a 7-inch diameter, so they weren't huge, but it was somebody came and actually applied. It's a 2-year application.
Okay,
and the total cost was about $200.
Well, if you, and that
for two trees.
Well, $100 a tree. Yeah, the imidacloprid, when we were selling it, you could do a 7-inch diameter tree for probably about $25 for treatment. So, you know, do some research, read all your directions. Make sure the labeling is so important, because if you don't do it correctly, you aren't going to get to the problem, and you're just putting chemicals out there in the environment that aren't doing any good. So, you know, look at some options. You know, have some tree people come out. They can tell you how much it's going to be. Ask them what chemicals they're going to use and that kind of thing.
And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call, Karen. Karen Johansson, by the way, our guest today, horticulture expert extraordinaire. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on this edition of Garden Talk as we visit with Karen Johansson. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for joining us. Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Speaking of posts on the Facebook page, we got a photo from Joan, wondering about her pepper plant, and it looks a little sickly there.
Yeah, that's anthracnose, from what I can see. It's a fungal disease. I would pick off the worst leaves because the spores will spread from water. And so pick off the worst leaves if you know, unless they're all the leaves. So you need to spray with a fungicide. Make sure when you're watering that you're only watering the base of the plant. You're not getting the leaves wet. Obviously, when it rains, you don't have any control over that. If it's just a few leaves, it might grow out of it. But I believe it's anthracnose.
Joanne in Jacksonport, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Interested in this emerald ash borer discussion. I guess it's up. The disease has been seen up here in Door County.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to our forester the other day, and they sent me from the extension or whatever a list of all the different chemicals that can be used and the method of using them. I don't have it handy, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm concerned about is the trade-off. I don't know if anybody has really studied and knows how the systemic, I guess it would be called systemic, the one that's injected into the tree.
Yeah, well, or taken up by the roots, that's systemic. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought there was another one that was applied differently. How it would affect the woodpeckers. And also, I thought, oh, here now we're going to just, if we pour the stuff into the ground, it's going to kill all the good stuff down there, too. And everything seems to be such a trade-off. And I just, I'm worried about all this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for good reason. That's why and you're right. You know, you're putting the chemicals in, so you just need to decide. And I think that's why the city of Madison, due to cost and this trade-off that you're talking, some of the trees, they just took down. City of Madison is going to spend thousands of dollars taking down ash trees. They're only going to keep a few specimens. Planting diversified, you know, when you replant, don't plant the whole thing because, you know, there was Dutch elm disease and now there's the, you know, emerald ash borer. Those are things to all consider. And if you do consider going the chemical route, again, you know, making sure you're applying them according to the label directions, you're applying them at the right time of the year, you're, you know, and all those things are very, very important. And I agree with what you're saying.
And thanks a lot for calling. And it always is a concern. It's always a little bit of a trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
We have Deb on Facebook who's tearing out some areas of her garden where shrubs aren't growing well or nothing but weeds are doing well. How do I clean up these areas for replanting? Is there a way to do it and still plant this fall?
Well, absolutely. It depends if you want to do it chemically or organically. If you want to do it organically, you might try smothering the weeds, get some black plastic, roll it out, the heat will heat that area up. Hopefully it'll kill some of the weed seeds and it'll kill the top growth. There are chemicals that you can use, glyphosate, which is also known as Roundup, that you spray on the leaves. So first of all, don't pull everything. It needs to be taken up by the leaf tissue. And there's no soil activity, meaning it's gone out of the soil. It breaks down within 7 days. Again, read all your directions, but that you can plant usually within a week. And then there's some other herbicides as well, but glyphosate or Roundup is the one that always comes to mind. If you're going to use that, make sure it's non-selective, so don't get on anything you want. It's taken up through the leaves, so make sure you spray the leaves. Don't pull your weeds first. And you get your best kill on a nice warm day when the things are actively growing.
Scott in Watertown has a comment. Hi, Scott. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is my second year with my straw bale garden.
Yeah.
And things are looking real well. My tomatoes are about 4 feet in diameter. They're just going crazy, the plants. But it seems like I have more vegetative growth than I had in the past and less fruit. I'm wondering if I'm using the right type of fertilizer, if I'm maybe a little too heavy in nitrogen, and if that's causing more vegetative growth and not giving the fruit a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch your nitrogen. What are you using? Do you know what the three numbers are? Is it a balanced or?
It was a balanced, something that was designed for tomatoes or for vegetables.
Yeah, but some of they vary. a lot. Well, watch your nitrogen. If you're getting all green growth, then just back off all the way. You might not need anything if nothing's coming out chlorotic or yellowy looking. Maybe you've got enough on there. Larry, did you actually do the straw bale gardening?
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about it? Because you probably know a little more about it than I do.
Yeah, actually, I've got a photo of mine, my couple of bales, up on my Facebook page if you want to see what mine look like. Mine are really, really healthy, but they're really producing a lot of fruit right now. We're eating more tomatoes than I can eat right now, as a matter of fact.
Well, did you just use granular once?
I used a granular, and I put it on once.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah,
and
that's
what I thought. Well, maybe that's it. I'm applying too much fertilizer because I've been fertilizing about once a week.
Oh, yeah, that's
so. Back off.
Yeah, that's okay. Too heavy. At least that's been my experience anyway.
Okay. One other quick question. My lilacs this year produce almost no blossoms. They look beautiful. They had dark green leaves, and the foliage was great. But for some reason, there was just a small handful of blossoms between the older established plants and the younger ones. And I'm wondering if there was a problem that was in the area because of the weather that caused that. Or
Have you pruned those lately?
Not recently. I had some ice damage a few years back, and I did cut some of the bigger stems back. I do have to do a little bit of that again this year, but
take those big stems right down to the ground, don't you, Karen?
Yeah, and with the lilacs, just make sure you're not pruning them, after, I don't know, the middle of July, because you're going to prune all your flowers off. I mean, if you want to thin them down, certainly, but so if you didn't prune too late last year, the only other thing that I can think of is possibly we had some winter kill of the buds. I mean, we had an awfully cold winter, and some of the buds, like, just died. If the plants look scraggly, you certainly can take some of the older, heavier canes all the way to the ground, like a third of them out. You could also top the whole things down and get them to bush out. But it sounds to me that, they could have winter killed the buds.
But if it's been a while since you've
pruned,
you might
want to do some renewal pruning.
Take the biggest ones and whack them off right at the ground.
Yeah, and what's the best time to
well,
bloom them?
Right after they're done blooming, but we're only in the middle of July, so get at it. Don't wait because they start to form their flower buds, and I'm not exactly sure when, but sometime at the end of August, September, and that. So get on it right away. Take out the heaviest canes from the base, and then also top them, and that's called renewal pruning. You can actually take out a third of the growth. It takes a little longer that way. I mean, just whacking on them like a haircut, you can certainly do that too, but that's where all the breaks are going to be. So to get a nicer looking shrub, if you can go thin them as well as take down the overall height, I think you might be in good shape. And if you haven't fertilized them in years, you might want to throw some fertilizer on them or have a soil test done and see.
Mm-hmm.
But putting a balanced fertilizer on, like a granular working around the base, that wouldn't hurt either.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Very good.
Yep, thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate the call. Amy in Livingston, hello.
Hi, this is Amy. I have some tomatoes in my greenhouse. They're in 2.5-gallon pots, black pots, and they grow wonderfully, and they get up to be about 3 feet tall, and they start to wilt. And they're almost completely wilted now. They've got tomatoes that are ripening but not growing anymore. And it happens year after year.
That seems like a really small pot, 2.5 gallons. That's only like 6-8 inches in diameter?
Oh, no. Then it's bigger than that. It'd be something like I would buy a shrub in.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, because minimum I'd say you'd want something 14-16 inches in diameter, which would be more like a 8-10-gallon pot.
Okay, that's more the size.
Okay. When you water them, they don't perk up?
Well, they do for a while, but it seems like one branch will just droop.
Then
the whole plant starts to droop.
Okay. Well, what I'm wondering is if they're wilting, and then you water them, and a lot of the plant perks up, that they're getting so dry in between watering, sometimes that actually kills the little microscopic root hairs, and they get more susceptible to fungus and dying off that way. So you might want to consider going into a little bit bigger pot, if that's a possibility for you. Watching that you don't let them get so dry that they wilt. Or you might have some type of pathogen in there. I was going to say, like, walnuts will cause, trees will cause them to wilt, but you shouldn't have that problem because they're in pots.
Right.
Next year, you might want to make sure you start out with all new media if you haven't done that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Make sure you bleach them, that you're not getting, you know, there are a lot of different viruses, things that can cause wilt, but usually wilt is water or walnut trees and those two things. So I would check out those.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd definitely put new media.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Jerry emailed and wondered about impatience. Have you seen downy mildew in Madison? Have you heard of any preventive measures gardeners can use?
Yeah, downy mildew is a bad one. And the only preventative measure is not to plant your impatiens. I mean, I know that sounds like a stupid thing to say, but it's a bad one. So if you had downy mildew in a garden bed area, there are some fungicides, but they're not real effective. They winter over, so you may want to consider planting begonias or some other type of shade tolerant. If they're in a container, make sure you wash your container real well with some bleach before next year, all new media. Make sure when you're buying your impatiens, you get them from a reputable source. I mean, it kind of came from down south. We had a lot of problem a couple of years ago, and you know, I don't know how bad it is this season because not being in business anymore, but yeah, it's nasty.
Very, very nasty thing.
Downy mildew is nasty.
Yeah, and we've got, there's lots of things we can always talk about here on the Ideas Network, especially on Garden Talk. Karen Johansson's our guest today, and she worked for many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison, and about a year now, isn't it, Karen?
Almost a year. Our last day was August 4th, 2013.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Which is really too bad. They have had a wonderful greenhouse. But there are still some other good ones out there, too, and obviously you want to take advantage of them. Karen Johansson, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. On this edition of Garden Talk, we visit with Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses of Madison. They were for many, many years operated in Madison, and she has her degrees in horticulture. She's had how many years? Your whole life, really.
I started working regularly at Johansson's in eighth grade, so 41 years later, we closed. So, yeah, a lot of experience. And you know, unfortunately, I never got to do vegetable gardening, you know, where I was working.
Yeah.
We put in one year when Michelle Obama did her whole vegetable gardens on the White House lawn. Well, at the front of the garden center, stuff flowers. It was my brother's idea, Gary. He planted a vegetable garden at the garden center. That was the first time I actually got to
to work with them.
And it was so much fun. You know, you learn so much just by doing, but, you know, and the customer interaction and all that. So, yeah, lots of experience from all different ways.
Well, Melody in New Glarus has a question for you. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have noticed in the last 2 years my garden, where I've always had it for like the past 18 years, did nothing. And I know last year was that funky year. But the year before, nothing. And this year, I didn't even try. And then we have a stand of pines in that area also. And the only thing I can think of is our neighbor across the line has a black walnut tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is that the thing that's doing it? Or
well, it
could well be.
Yeah, most definitely. Tomatoes especially hate black walnut, and there's a substance that the roots roots put out from, and it's called juglans, and it can go 20 feet beyond the edge of the root. So if you take this big walnut tree and you go all the way to the drip line, the roots are at least that far, and then you go 20 more feet. So if you're that close, very definitely. Now, not all veggies are affected, but tomatoes especially, peppers somewhat, and there are some things that are not affected by the black walnut. So provided you have good sunshine, you know, there's certain things that you could try. There's some really good lists on, actually on Johansson's website, we had some good lists of things that are tolerant of the black walnut, juglans. And then other things, if you don't think it's that, have some soil samples done. You know, it never hurts anyways. I think it's about $15. You just bag it up and you send it to the soils lab here in Madison. I think it's like $15. It'll be the best $15 you spend because it'll give you your whole nutrient and organic matter content. And maybe you're, you know, you just need to add some nutrients or whatever like that.
Or if it is the black walnut, raised beds can work if you've got something at the base so that the roots can't come up underneath.
Yeah.
And obviously, you need new soil.
Yeah, and, you know, but just bear in mind that the tomatoes especially are so sensitive to it that even if you grow your tomatoes in pots and you set them on the ground and the tomato roots come out of the bottom of the holes of the pots and get into the ground, that's how sensitive the tomatoes are. But there are other veggies, but of course, I can't think of all the ones off the top of my head that are not affected by it.
This, you know, tree was just planted probably by a squirrel on her yard. It just kind of goes that way. Would it be affecting those pine trees? Because they've gotten more sickly looking.
No, I don't believe so. But again, I'd have to look that one up. But I don't think we had pines. I got black walnuts in my backyard, and I had tons of pine trees, and it never really affected them. But what took my pine trees out was a gall. And it was a, you know, so
spruce gall.
Yeah, and there were
what
some. Well, it was like a bore. It was a trunk bore, and then there's spruce gall. So it might be some other thing that's taking your pine trees out.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Sure. Or just shade, too. I want to throw that in there. Pine trees don't like shade. So if the black walnut is big and it's shading, that might also be a problem.
Terry in Onalaska, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
What can we do for you? Great. What can we do for you?
I have a question. I recently bought a hibiscus, but I believe it's a mandevilla. Is that the proper?
Sure, mandevilla, but that's not a hibiscus at all. Yeah, totally different plant.
Okay, mallow is a perennial, right?
Mallow is a perennial variety of hibiscus, yeah. And
okay.
It's kind of a common name.
Beautiful.
What's it look like? You said it's a vine. Does it have big pink tubular-shaped flowers?
It's got red ones.
Okay, but it's like a big tube? Like big trumpet shape, kind of?
I guess I would say yes.
Yeah, and if it's real viney, I'm going to guess flowers. It's mandevilla, and that's they're wonderful. But they are not related to hibiscus at all, but you grow them real similar. Lots of sun, keep it well fertilized, and yeah, they bloom all summer. They're great.
Well, what my issue is, so I'm wondering, can I bring it in the house?
Well, you can. Here's the deal. It's going to pout. So bring it in.
It's going to lose all its leaves.
You cut it way back. And I've had mixed results with wintering. I winter my hibiscus every year, and that works real well. I prune them way back, and they come back. But the mandevilla, I had very mixed results, even wintering them in the garden center at Johansson's. Sometimes they'd come back the next year, and they'd grow out these beautiful, amazing leaves. I never could get the dumb things to bloom. So I had mixed results wintering my mandevilla, but certainly it's worth a try. And they're kind of bug-prone in-house, just like hibiscus are. So watch for your white fly, spider mite and such, and treat as necessary. And you need a real sunny window and cut them back. But, yeah, definitely it's worth a try.
Mm-hmm.
Can I cut those viney, like, those are ones that are reaching out?
Well, you certainly can cut them back, but they bloom off of their new growth. So if you whack on them too much, you're going to be sacrificing your flowers. But yeah, if it's the Alice DuPont, you said it's red, but some of them get really big and they're very, very tenacious. So yeah, you can whack on them, but just know that they bloom off of the new growth, so don't get too carried away.
Mm-hmm.
But then when can I transplant it? Because it needs to be in a bigger pot.
Oh, well, you can transplant it anytime. Yeah, go ahead and pop it up to the next size pot. If the roots are real balled up when you pull it out, you know, maybe loosen them slightly.
Chances are.
Yeah, you should be able to repot
it. 3 or 4 weeks
mm-hmm.
out of the garden center, and chances are it's in too small of a pot.
Well, how often do you need
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. How often are you needing to water it? Is it more than every day, or are you watering it twice a week? Give me an idea of how often.
Well, I know that they need water, so I worry about it, so I water it a lot.
Okay, but is it dry when you water it?
Yeah, the whatever you want to call it, the dirt or whatever in there,
mm-hmm.
it's very drainable.
and it makes me nervous.
Okay, but does the plant require you to water it every day, or it droops, or how often are you actually watering it? Every day or every other day?
Probably every day.
Okay, if you're watering it every day, sure, you could put it up to the next size pot. The reason why I was asking the question is if you were going to tell me that, I only water it a couple times a week, then I would say, no, don't put it in a bigger pot because it's plenty big and you might, get it too wet. Mm-hmm. But if you're needing to water it every day, sure, you could pop it up to the next size pot. And then those are pretty hungry plants. So I would recommend using a water-soluble fertilizer on it about once a week, especially if you are watering every day because the nutrients leach out. So, sure. Yeah, but make sure you keep them well fertilized. Lots of sun and they'll bloom all summer. They're great plants.
I've been thinking about repotting Limey, my lime tree, but Limey keeps...
Limey?
Well, that's my daughter named the lime tree Limey. Limey keeps cranking all these limes.
Well,
and I'm always worried about transplanting all the limes fall off or something.
Yeah, and we had an amazing lime tree at Johansson's, and they don't mind being a little rip bound. So don't get too carried away, especially with a lime tree that you're going to carry in for the winter.
Yeah, it comes in.
Because if you put it in a ginormous pot, first of all, trying to carry it, it's going to be difficult. And secondly, if you get that whole soil mass wet in the winter... They're not growing as quickly, and you might get it too wet, and they rot and all such as that, So be, a little careful. But I water my hibiscus and all that stuff that I winter over every day. I have to. Every day, that's my ritual. I get up in the morning, and I water everything, and the plants do great, and I fertilize them, So some things like mandevillas, hibiscus, things that are in full sun in containers, you are going to need to water them every day. It doesn't necessarily mean they need a bigger pot always.
Amy in Milwaukee has a question. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Love Public Radio. I have a red bud. It's about 5 years old that didn't make it through the winter. But at the base is vigorous growth coming out. It's very vigorous, lots of greenery, about 5 foot already.
Well,
yes.
Here's the problem is that you've got all these water shoots coming up from the dead part. I don't know if you're ever going to get that nice trunk and that lollipop shape again. So that's the only thing. If you don't mind it being kind of bushy, you'd probably be okay with it. But and you're sure it's the red bud that's coming up, that's not a weed or something else that came back?
No, it's the red bud.
Okay.
It's got those gorgeous leaves.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind it being kind of more of a bush shape, you're good. But if you want that tree with a single trunk, I don't think you're going to be able to get that without some real selective pruning.
You'd have to, pick one and
prune
the rest.
Yeah, pick one and prune it, and yeah. So, I mean, it's possible, definitely. That would be the only problem there.
Oh, okay. Well, excellent. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Scott in Madison, hi to you.
Hey, how you doing? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a plum tree, and a cherry tree, both of them are dwarfs. They're both 2 years old. The cherry tree produces, but my plum tree does not. Second year, and it flowers, it's great.
Oh.
It looks healthy and that, but no fruit.
That was what I was going to ask, if you're getting flowers. Okay, well, so you're getting flowers, that's one thing that's great. So you're either not getting pollination for one reason or another. You might need to go out there in the spring if the tree's small enough and be a little bee with a paintbrush or something. Or the other thing is you might be getting the flowers freezing late in the spring, and they're freezing the flowers before they pollinated and set fruit, or the little baby fruits are getting frozen off. So I don't know. I believe there are products. I know there are for tomatoes and things, blossom and fruit set things. So you might want to investigate with the UW Extension if there are products that you could spray on it to try to set the fruit. The fact that it's flowering is the good news.
Yeah, that's right. So it's worth it. Certainly, I'm certainly giving it. I wouldn't give up on it yet this year.
I would, if you're getting flowers, boy, you should be getting fruit. So I would do some more investigating and see if there's some fruit set products or something like that before I gave up on it.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's a myth or not, but I was told that I had to get another plum tree so that it has a mate. So I don't know if it's a myth or what.
Well, are you in the city though?
No, I live in Minnesota, southern Minnesota, by Austin.
But are you out in the middle of the country?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, then I don't know for sure if they need to be cross-pollinated with a different variety of plum. But, you know, I was going to say, if you're right in the city, usually there's going to be some more plum trees nearby. But off the top of my head, I don't know if you need another plum. You very well mean maybe do. I'd have to look that one up.
Okay, in my neighborhood, I got all the neighbors got apple trees, man. I got a cherry tree. I mean,
yeah,
but you're not seeing any other plum trees.
Right, I don't see any other plum trees in the neighborhood.
And they might be freezing, though. You know, Minnesota, we're farther north, they've got those late frosts. So, I would check with your extension up there and see what kind of wisdom they can give you, you know, in your area and see if they've got any other ideas for you.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I love your show. I have a bed of basil that I planted this year. There's about 10 plants in the bed and 3 kale plants. All of a sudden, the basil plants kind of developed these brownish spots, and they yellowed, and pretty much the plants dying off.
So. Oh, yeah, that sounds fungus.
But I've been able to at least look online from pictures on other plants and kind of troubleshooting what's going on. It looks like some sort of fungus. Mm-hmm. Is it fusarium or a rust fungus?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious to how I should go about if it is a fungus, getting rid of the plants and replacing them.
Well, you know, that'd be one thought. Just know that fungus kind of travels by moisture. So when you're watering, try not to get water on the leaves. So water the base of the plant. Try not to water in the evening. Obviously, come home from work and the thing is wilted, water it. But if you can water in the morning of your plants in general, that way the foliage has a chance to dry out overnight. You don't want your leaves being wet overnight. Whack it back. Basil does really responds well to being cut back. And so then maybe the new growth will come out. You could spray with some fungicides. There are some all-purpose ones, but again, something you're eating, I don't necessarily recommend doing that without knowing what you're spraying for. So you might want to try to get the fungus identified. But definitely try to give it more air, whack it back. And you know, there are some organofungicides you could try spraying on and at the very first sign of disease.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. We have Brian in Superior next. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Larry.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks for the show.
Yeah.
This spring, I planted 10 blueberry plants, and 6 of them are really thriving. They're all planted exactly the same. 2 of them have died, and another 2 still, even though they've lost all their leaves, the stems are still green. And it's been that way for over a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's something that I can do to stimulate them or give up on them or what?
Well, the ones that are alive, you know, most certainly, you know, make sure you keep them well watered, fertilize them. Blueberries like to be real acidic. So depending on, with Superior.
No, I'm at a 4.5 to 5.
Okay, and that's where you want to be. So that's good. You're testing your pH. You know, I always, with customers, you've got 10 things in a row. Why does one in the middle die? I always said, well, you know, it's like a classroom of kindergartners. They all got them, you know, someone comes with the flu and 6 of them got the flu and some didn't. There's a reason, but we just don't know for sure what it is. Maybe your soil was slightly different in that area. Maybe they got a little dry. Maybe that plant wasn't just as healthy. Maybe a rabbit ate the root or, you know, or a mouse or something. It's always hard to just pinpoint exactly what's going on. But I'm glad the 6 are doing well.
Well, my main question is the fact that the stems are still very green.
Then I'd leave them. I'd leave them and I'd keep them well watered and cross your fingers and see what they do.
There's no root stimulator or anything?
Oh, certainly. There's some really good transplanting solutions, and most of them have, like, it's called gerbilic acid or something. But go to your garden center, and there's also this product that I don't know if you can even sell it in Wisconsin because they didn't have the right labeling, but it was really cool. I liked it. It was called Super Thrive, and it came out in the 50s, and it has 1950s packaging on it, and I love that product. It worked great. If you can get a hold of some Super Thrive somewhere, or like I said, there are some transplanting solutions that have rooting hormones as opposed to just your nitrogen, you know, your fertilizers. So yes, there definitely are some that you could try putting it on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another quick side question is, I've had a really difficult time trying to find sulfur. I mean, I guess that's become kind of a controlled item with terrorism the way it is. And
really?
But, you know, I haven't been able to find it.
Okay.
And I've been told that I can substitute citric acid. Is that true?
Well, it depends what you're trying to do. You know, there's elemental sulfur, which is just right. sulfur. Now, that's going to be really slow release. And you put that on, and it takes a long time. And then there are, like, your to try to acidify your soil, there is, like, ammonium sulfate and aluminum sulfate that work a lot faster. And I believe it's the ammonium sulfate that you want for blueberries. Aluminum is the one you want for hydrangeas. That works better. Just for some reason, having the sulfur attached to that ionic formulation. So ammonium sulfate I would look for. And boy, you know, we just closed a year ago. We didn't have any trouble getting elemental sulfur or ammonium or aluminum sulfate. So look for ammonium sulfate, and that will be faster release, but it's hot, meaning it releases fast, so you got to be careful with it. You can't dump a whole half a bag on there. You're going to burn your plant up. But so read all your directions on that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Kathy and Eau Claire next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. We have two azalea bushes that are probably 15, 16 years old. We did trim them back slightly last fall, and they did bloom this year. They did have green leaves come out, but now, over the last maybe 2 weeks, they've been dropping leaves daily, like,
oh, really?
You know, one of them particularly probably drops 100 or more leaves a day.
Wow. Oh, that's not good.
We do notice that there's still some growth, but I guess I'm just kind of concerned about
that. Yeah, I would be. Then this is an established plant, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well,
15 years old.
I'm wondering if you've got some type of mouse damage or rabbit damage down, you know, get on your hands and knees and dig around and see if you've gotten some type of rodent damage that has just slightly girdled the plant. In other words, it's only chewed on half of the bark, so the plant is having trouble translocating all of its moisture and things. But that's not good. I mean, you've had these things. Obviously, you know that's not normal. Now, what you can do about it, depending on the cause, I don't know. But, yeah, that's not normal at all. And then also, I would caution on pruning your azaleas in the fall because that's when they set their buds. So azaleas and rhododendrons, you're best off pruning those in the spring after they're done blooming. But, you know, just a little side note there.
Good luck. Thanks, Kathy, for calling. Online on my Facebook page, Florence sent us a photo of her Annabelle hydrangea. Mm-hmm. And it flowers really weird. Those flowers that we're seeing, she has two photos, are on the same hydrangea, and they blossom like that every year. So they look quite a bit different.
Yeah. They certainly do. Well, the thing is that I'm just wondering if there's two cuttings on the bush, and you've got two different varieties, because you've got two, I mean...
They look like two different varieties.
Yeah, and the one on the bottom... Those are cool. I mean, we used to get blue ones in like that had that whole flat little tiny and then the thing. So I'm just wondering that when she bought the bush originally, there were two different types of cuttings in there.
Yeah.
And you've got two different types of hydrangea. I don't know. Or you had a mutant and something sported. In other words, that's how sometimes we get new plant varieties. A plant will just sport out something weird and somebody goes, oh, that's cool. And then they start propagating it. So that could be the case too. But I'm thinking more that there were two different kinds of cuttings on her plant.
Karen, the time flew by. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Anytime, Larry. It's really fun. It keeps me brushed up. It makes me dust the cobwebs off my brain. And anytime. Yeah, I love it. Thank you.
Karen Johansson, our guest today. She did a wonderful job and great to have her along. And she'll be back and we will talk with her again. On Monday, we mentioned Phil Pelletieri earlier in the show, and on Monday, he's back. He's going to talk about the insects that are all around us and what they're up to. Stay with us. Lots in store.